There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Another couple hours of live local talk. Glad you're here. And if you're new to the mix, welcome. Glad to have you here. Phone number and text line are the same. 343-0106. I guess on copper line phones, you got to do the 251-343-0106. Remember, too, with the FM Talk 106.5 app. Have I mentioned that to you? If you got that app, you can have one-button calling from the app. Also, you can text us from the app and leave us one of those talkback messages where you can record a message, emails it to us, and we can play it back on the air. Now, if you haven't downloaded it yet, pretty easy to go do. If you are an iPhone user, go to the App Store and just look for FM TALK 1065. No point between the 6 and 5. I don't know why. Just it messes it up. So just look for FM Talk 1065 on the App Store, or if you're an Android user on Google Play, same thing, FM TALK 1065. You'll see our logo. That's the app. It is free. You download that, and it's like a digital multi-tool. Not only can you stream the station right there from your phone, but you can get access to, I think we're now at 56 hours a week of live local programming, shows that are produced from our studios right here at Airport and 65. You can get those there, get show schedules, you can get our social media feeds, you can get up-to-date traffic maps, weather information on there, all in one place on the app. Make sure to check it out, FM Talk 106.5. Just look for that on your wherever you go to get apps. All right, it is the second Tuesday of the month, and coming up, well, we say hello to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran because he joins us for Ask the Sheriff. Sheriff, good to see you.
Glad to be here, Sean.
A lot to do on today's show, and I guess I want to start off first. Did you have a chance to listen to the president yesterday with his gun violence and his... He went after ghost guns again yesterday.
I read several of the stories. Okay. I don't think I actually saw his speech. If he made a speech, it's usually incoherent. But but I did do the reading.
Incoherent. So let me. So he in that discussion, he talked about ghost guns again, like he has in the past. You and I've had this discussion. Can you, from your perspective in law enforcement, what is a ghost gun by definition? Is that a term that y'all use in law enforcement?
Yes, it's definitely a term we use. You know, it's gotten pretty popular over the last few years, is where you buy the parts that make up a weapon, and you buy the parts, and they don't have serial numbers on them.
Uppers, so, lowers.
Yeah, mostly it's the lower part is the bulk of a weapon, and so it's the lower, and so you buy that, then you buy the additional parts to put it together, and you end up with a gun of sorts without a serial number, and so therefore you don't have a manufacturer that you could go back to and trace with the serial number.
How often do y'all see those at a county level? I mean... Have you seen one before?
I think we've had them, but it's not as big, in my opinion, down here as it is in other parts of the country. And it may be because of gun restrictions in other parts of the country, I think, is what pushes it there, where it's harder to...
State laws are harder for somebody to obtain a rifle.
And stuff like that, yes. But, you know, we're pretty open with the sales of weapons here in the South, and so I don't think we see as much of it. But, quite frankly, a lot of the people that purchase them are gun collectors and stuff like that. And
it's not
the majority
you're
of those
seeing...
people are not involved in crime.
Okay. It's not something that you're going, oh, my gosh, Sean, another ghost gun and a crime here locally.
Right. And some of those articles I've read, and they're talking a big thing, I was trying to read into, okay, well, of all these crimes, tell me how many of them were ghost guns. And the articles that are speaking about it never seem to report that.
Right. It's very interesting to me because that... conversation, ghost guns was 50% of what the president talked about.
Yeah.
And then so I knew having you coming in today, I wanted to go from a law enforcement perspective. is this really an issue? I mean, it seems like you'd be talking about handguns.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, if you look at what crimes are committed with, right?
But that's right. The majority of crimes are committed with handguns. And, of course, then you have a number of crimes or, you know, a lot of your shootings and stuff. You do have a lot of assault rifles that are involved in some of that over the last few years. That's certainly increased, but still the majority are handguns. And I understand the need to perhaps somehow be able to trace a weapon or something like that, but it's just not that big of a portion of the crimes that we're investigating.
Yeah, that's why it was good to hear that from you, because I'm trying to figure out if we're going to put this attention, federal attention on it. Here's
so
the
much,
new
yeah.
thing, right? And mm-hmm. we're going to spend money and time and all that stuff. Are we chasing the right rabbit, you know?
Well, I guess it takes so many years sometimes for these regulations to go into place, so maybe they're forward-thinking. They've started it several years ago, and people have been questioning the need for it. But I guess our listeners need to know that the way the guns or manufacturing and everything, that all the gun manufacturers have to put, by federal law, you know, serial numbers mm-hmm. on the guns. When the manufacturer distributes the guns to a wholesale dealer or warehouse, then they have to keep records with who they sell those guns to. And it might be, say, in Mobile or Sports Academy, and then Sports mm-hmm. Academy has to keep records of who they sell that gun to. And then if we find a gun discarded on the street in the scene of a crime or something, we can take that pistol, gun, rifle, use a serial number, send it to the ATF. The ATF will go backwards, back to the original manufacturer, say, where did you distribute this? Then they'll send someone to that agency or that warehouse, then from the warehouse to the retailer. The retailer will say, I sold it to Sean Sullivan back
right.
in 2005. We'll go
right.
to Sean. He said, man, I sold that. I gave it away
yeah.
years ago. And, you know, sometimes we can find out who last possessed it, and oftentimes we get somewhere and they say, that gun was stolen out of my house in a burglary 7 or 8 years ago.
How often do you hear that?
All the time.
All the time.
When you get them. I mean, most guns like that, because quite frankly, the majority of guns that are used in crimes are stolen guns.
Yeah.
You know, people that are legitimate citizens go purchase a firearm at a retail establishment. They don't say, I'm going to go spend several hundred dollars on this Glock and mm-hmm. I'm going to go commit a crime. No, it doesn't work that way.
Also, President talked about universal background checks yesterday, and
yeah.
this is we background checks versus a a universal background check is what? Because right now, you know, if I may or may not go in and purchase a firearm, I go through a background check.
The you know, you can argue that both ways, the background check, how it may keep guns out of the hands of criminals, but if you go to a federally licensed firearm dealer, by federal law, they have to do a NICS check or mm-hmm. on you, which is most people consider that a background check. But if
yeah,
you go
am I
to,
messing terms up there? The NICS check. That's
NICS
what
check,
I'm used
yeah,
to.
Yeah, it's a national criminal background guns. Check, and that's what the firearms dealers have to get before they can sell you a firearm. Some states use a concealed carry permit if that's been issued, because a NICS check is done on them in addition to other stuff. Then some states, they will allow that to be accepted in lieu of a NICS check.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't purchase from a federal firearms dealer and you go to the gun show here, and it's not a federal firearms dealer but just an individual gun collector that sells guns, he can sell you that gun without doing a NICS check. Therefore, you don't have a
private
check.
Citizen to private citizen.
Yeah, private citizen, or mm-hmm. me to my son. I give my
right.
son a gun. I don't have to do a background check or a NICS check on him. So
right.
that's the argument against having universal background checks, that it restricts me to who I can sell a weapon to or give a weapon to, you know, family members passing down and stuff. But then the flip side of that is, if you advertise you have an AR-15 for sale and some guy calls you up on Facebook or on Craigslist and said, hey, I'm interested, and you say, meet me at the Kmart pararking lot, and he shows up, he's got $1,000, you sell it to him, you don't realize that he's wanted and posted on the post office wall, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no background check on to know, hey, this guy's not only a convicted felon, he's wanted for all these charges.
But once again, wouldn't it just affect people that are going to do it the right way? You know,
that's right. It's you know, isn't that what we always talk about, our rights? You have
yeah.
certain rights, but you got to give up certain rights to have certain protections.
Like the bad guy gun dealer
yeah.
is not going to, whether there's a universal background check or not, they're not going to go through that.
Right. That's one of the reasons I'm so pro pistol permit or concealed carry permit. If you want to be a responsible person and you're selling a gun to an individual, you say, hey, do you have a concealed carry? And if you say, yeah, I said, well, let me see it. And you show it to me. I said, hey, I feel comfortable selling it to you, because
mm-hmm.
I know you're not a convicted felon and you're not a domestic abuser.
Yeah, this is
it's a safe way,
right.
you know, to at least feel good that you didn't put it in the arms or hands
right.
of a criminal.
You're making that personal choice.
That's right.
And this goes back to something my friend said years ago, and I think I brought it up several times to you, and I don't know, I'd have to go through the state legislature, is if you choose to, once again, y'all, if you choose to, on your driver's license while you're going through that process and they have that information, if there was any way you could have a designation, like you have boat designation on there, motorcycle, all that stuff, have something that if somebody, you know, didn't have a concealed carry permit but just wanted to know that the person they're selling it to, hey, show me your ID, I'll show you my ID. We both got a G for gun or R for rifle or whatever it is on there. Not that it's required, but that could be for peace of mind for people who want to make sure they're not selling it. Because, I mean, I want the ability to sell firearms as a private citizen to other private citizens, but I sure as heck don't want to, give somebody who's going to go harm somebody with it.
Exactly. Totally agree.
So the universal background check would then be more than the next check. It goes out of the retail location and goes to every. How do you enforce that? And would it be the job of a sheriff to enforce that? Who enforces that?
I don't know. I mean, all I can think of would be one huge bureaucratic mess.
Yeah.
Because maybe who does creating that? A whole nother federal agency or something. How would you check all that?
You and I are, got a dandy. I got a 16 Belgian Sweet 16. I'm going to pretend I'd never sell that shotgun, but I'm going to sell it to you, right? You and I are going to, we know each other, and we just come here to the station, whatever, and we'll sell you that shotgun. Like, would there be an agent have to show up? I mean, I'm just trying to understand this. How, you know,
I don't know how you could do it without having an entirely gun registration program. You'd have to have every gun registered to be able to prove that someone sold a gun without a universal background check.
So, it goes to gun registration.
Sure. I mean, how else would you do it?
Yeah. That's kind of what I wanted to dig at there.
Well, you got it. I mean, it doesn't take long to uncover what that really means.
Yeah, because, I mean, they say, well, the universal background check, and you can take parts of it, and people say, yeah, I want to make sure that bad guy doesn't get a rifle, and I don't sell to him. But then you go, well, how would you actually do
that? How would the government prove that you sold a gun without a background check?
I mean,
the only way you could do it is both people have to apply for file paperwork
and then put the serial numbers down.
Right, and I want to sell it to Sean Sullivan, and I'm waiting for you to give me approval. I mean, it'd have to be similar to your automatic weapons. You know, you have to have a tax stamp
for that, and suppressors
and like that, and
short barrel rifles.
There's a cost to any kind of program like that.
So I've heard. I mean, the texter says private sales would have to be processed through an FFL. But that's what I'm saying. Like, you and I would then have to go to somebody with an FFL, stop what they're doing. They'd charge us some kind of fee, and then it would be registered.
There'd be records of it.
Yeah.
And again, though, if I don't go through a FFL.
Or if you hand it down, like you said, if I want to hand,
to your son or grandson or something, or even.
In my house, my daughter, who wants all of them, if I had any. If I hand those down, then I would have to go process.
I mean, to go through a firearms license, you know, how do you know, hey, I've always had this gun?
So right.
You're going to have to identify all the guns to be able to prove whether there's been a background check.
All right. Another thing the president talked about on this was he said, I'm back with the assault weapons ban. I'm going to get after the assault weapons ban. If that comes down to law enforcement for y'all to enforce, I remember during the Clinton era that I worked for a local retailer, right? And we sold guns there. And during the Clinton era, we had to take the bayonet mounts off of them. People could we reduced the capacity of magazines. You couldn't have a flash suppressor. It was silly. It was like decorative stuff, right?
Right.
If they do an assault weapons ban, what does it mean for, like, y'all gonna have to judge what
they've
the assault
done it once already, remember?
Right. That's what I'm saying. During that period, it was
a flood of the weapons, you know, and then it sent the prices of the clips and the weapons way up, and then it expired after, I think it was 10 years.
It was a sunset, right?
And then now you can buy clips a dime a dozen, so to speak, you know, because there were so many, you know, at the time, I guess, that were later manufactured.
Right, and like it was folding stocks, if you remember, where you couldn't have a folding stock. I mean, to me, it just all seemed very silly. You couldn't have a folding stock. You couldn't have a bayonet mount. Which, out of all the things that are threatening about a rifle, the bayonet mount didn't seem to be. and then you couldn't have a flash suppressor on there. I mean, I don't know. They're returning to that. All right. Got folks holding on line. We'll get to their calls when we get back. Also, your text at 343-0106. Your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. And your chance to ask the sheriff, our guest this hour, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Go to the phones first here. And Robert is in Sims. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Sheriff Cochran, I'm glad to get a chance to speak with you.
Yes, sir.
This is a real simple question. I'm sure you know just the answer to it right off the top of your head. But I will say I've asked four or five or maybe six law enforcement officers over the last 6 or 7 years. The last one, a sergeant at a gun show I went to before the pandemic. What is the legal size pocket knife that you can carry in your pocket? Now, I'm a fan of the Trapper. Case Trapper. I'm sure Sean could
case
be familiar
knives.
With that, and you
yep.
too, because
yep.
I was informed by some young men in a knife store, that's an old man's knife, I didn't really know how to pocket that at the time. But, having said that, I measured it one time, and I believe the cutting edge is less than 3 inches, but I read the law, and, you know, as you law enforcement people are quick to say, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm asking you, what kind of knife would I have to have on my person? Get arrested.
There's a city ordinance that designates the length of the blade in a knife, and I can't remember if it was 2.5
oh,
or 3 inches.
Oh my God! Don't tell me you don't know either.
Well, I'm not.
So it's not a county ordinance. It is a city of Mobile ordinance.
Yeah, the city of Mobile has an ordinance about the length of it. And like I say, I'm
so
thinking
Robert
it's either
and
2.5 or 3 inches.
Okay, so Robert and I are in the county. We're okay.
Yeah. Now then you've got a few other laws, you know, brass knuckles are outlawed by the state law.
And yeah. And Sean, let me tell you this. I've been meaning to call you a few weeks ago, and there is a on the city ordinance that Sheriff Cochran is referring to. There's a page on the Mobile City website, and it starts out with brass knuckles and slingshots. I get the brass knuckles to be
slingshots.
Honest, I don't understand the slingshot part of that.
Slingshots. What?
Yeah. They've been outlawed forever.
Sheriff Cochran tell you about the slingshots being illegal? I mean, I'm sure he knows that.
Yeah, I violated law a bunch when I was about 10, 11, 12, 13.
Well, at any rate.
Slingshots.
Yes.
There's a requirement on there that it does require a permit to carry pepper spray. Now, you had Captain Birch in a few weeks ago, and he said he wasn't aware of any ordinance, but there is on the Mobile City webpage, ordinance, again, you have to have a permit for it, and you, according to the webpage, you can get one of your folks to pull it up. It you require a permit to sell it, and that's been on the law, been on the books since 1965. I actually called the police station, the Mobile police station. I know this probably doesn't fall under Sheriff Cochran, but and it says in there that you have to get the permit from the chief of police. Well, I'm not going to tell you who I spoke to down there, but I was surprised how up the chain of brass I got, and nobody knows any. They know about it now because I called them.
I'm still sitting here blown away by the slingshot thing.
Sheriff, who could I call to find out? Because I'm the guy. I always want to be inside the law. I don't want my future being held on. You know what kind of mood a young police officer is in. So,
well,
I'm sure my Case Trapper is probably okay.
I'm not familiar with the Case Trapper.
Oh, it's a fantastic pocket knife. Yeah,
okay. It's not overly large. It's kind of a medium. I would call it a medium-sized pocket knife.
It's not bigger than 4 inches, though, right?
You got a rope, you know.
Is it a four? I mean, the Trapper, if I'm thinking it's like a 4-inch blade, I think, or a 3.5.
I measured it, Sean, and I'm pretty sure the cutting edge, I don't know. I mean, I could be off on that, but where would I go to find out the legalities of now?
You can pull up
I have
city
some
ordinances.
Other pocket knives that are a little bigger than my Trapper, but they fold up and fit in my pocket. I mean, I don't really.
You can pull up the city ordinances on the internet, and you can look up all yourself.
I looked for that, and I couldn't find it. That was the day I found the pepper spray law. That Sean, I really encourage you to try to look at that because it's interesting. Pepper spray. What do they call it?
Tear gas.
But later on down in there, they have a description, or they say any similar liquid, which would be pepper spray.
All right. Well, the hard break is here. You've gotten me a lot of things to think about here. I'm still stuck on the slingshot. What about the step up from that?
The wrist rocket. Yeah.
Not that I was familiar, may have. All right.
I shot a rabbit with a wrist rocket one time. It's the first time I knew rabbits made a horrendous noise. It scared me to death. I didn't know what I'd shot.
You said I'm not going to do that again.
That rabbit jumped about 4 feet up there. I was like, oh my God.
Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. A chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. What up? Grab some of these texts, and then I got some more of my questions as well. Yes, and a lot of picture of people unfolding their pocket knives and putting a tape measure next to them. But you said that is a city ordinance, not a county ordinance, right?
Yes. We just have city ordinances and state laws, no county ordinances.
And Joshua, if I knew, I wouldn't tell you on the air, because he said, where's a good place to buy ammo in Mobile County that actually has ammo in stock? What is y'all's situation now? You talked about how y'all get so far ahead of it.
We do, and we monitor it, and we're okay.
You're okay?
Yeah, but we ordered it way, way in advance, and then reorder it again when you get that in.
Because, I mean, y'all are constantly doing qualifying and all
sure.
that.
I mean, our qualifications every year, annually, and then... you know, our SWAT teams have to practice, you know, very often and fire a lot of ammunition, and it's a lot of ammunition.
Is SWAT specific to the county or the city, or are they different? Is there a SWAT that's a county SWAT, or is it
yeah,
a city
we
SWAT?
Use the, I mean, it's the term SWAT. Everybody just better understands what it is, you know, your different teams. But, yeah, we have our own team, and the city has their own team. And,
okay.
And you saw in the news last week probably yeah. where they had the Bearcat, which is the armored vehicle that you can go crash. They have one. We have one. Things like that.
That's, yeah, because we had, because that story from last week where the SWAT did come on the scene ended up being that it wasn't really a kidnapping.
Yeah, I saw part of it ended up not being kidnapped, and they charged the would-be victim for
right.
some kind of violation, but I did see where they knocked the garage door down with the ramrod or something on the Bearcat.
Yeah, people have, so in those situations, I mean, when, I'm not without telling me some secrets or something, like when does it go from being deputies or officers to saying we need SWAT? What is there a certain escalation?
Yeah, and that's a kind of a gray area. That's a call that's made on the scene by either the on the scene officers or supervisor, field supervisor, make that determination. Generally, they'll report to the supervisor what the situation is. If it's a known criminal that's already got a history of violence and stuff like that, and you know them to be armed or
okay.
mentally unstable, you know, you just have to make a call, and depending on if they're barricaded or could be barricaded. But then a lot of the teams that go out, like we have a warrant detail that's assigned to the U.S. Marshals Task Force, and they're all have special training in high risk warrant, you know, apprehensions, and so they would perform a lot of SWAT-like tactics in arresting somebody, but yet not be a SWAT team.
So now I know. I wonder these things. Yeah, once again, your chance to ask the sheriff at 343-0106. We'll talk about something that you and I, that dominated our conversation probably, my gosh, well, since session started, but probably before that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the, you know, permitless carry, mm-hmm. some people call it constitutional carry bill, passed through. You've got this, the governor signed off mm-hmm. on it. When does this go into effect?
Sometime in January.
So even when the governor said she was waiting around to see if she was going to renew her permit, you know, in February, mm-hmm. she would be still have to have a concealed carry permit to carry whatever she carries till January.
Till January, that's correct.
So that's one thing I think is getting lost in the discussion, that this doesn't go into effect
that's
until
right.
January.
If you don't have a permit and you get caught carrying a gun without a permit, then you're going to be arrested.
Yeah, and you'd put a post up, or the sheriff's department had put a post up
yeah.
on Facebook about the weekend that broke so many hearts
yeah.
here. Where you, it starts on. I remember my phone going off. I couldn't believe all the. I was like, no, that's the same shooting, and it was
different shootings.
And then you have the vigil on Sunday night for the people that were shot and killed. Then gunfire breaks out there. Y'all put a post up on that, and you said that on the show. You told me before that when there would be these crimes, you were going to list the names. In this case, y'all showed the pictures of the members of our local delegation mm-hmm. that either mm-hmm. carried or voted
That's
for
right.
that bill.
They were sponsors of the bill here in Mobile County. The incident you're talking about was that deadly Friday where there were two people killed at College Hill and Zay, and then a shootout at the loop and
yeah.
ended in a chase downtown. And so that candlelight vigil that was held Sunday night at College Hill and Zay, some individuals in the crowds started firing rounds, and there were police officers on the scene, but you know, I don't think they saw who did the shootings or fired the rounds, but they did apprehend three or four individuals, and And three of them were charged with just no pistol permits. And that was the only charges, I think. Well, one of those individuals charged with no pistol permit was arrested, made a $500 bond. But the weapon he had, they seized off of him, was ballistically tested and determined that he had shot a guy in the face the two nights before, Friday night, at the Bleachers nightclub over here on Airport Boulevard, and also shot in an occupied vehicle. And so that's a prime example. What I wanted to point out was, when you take that tool of the pistol permit away, they may not have, well, they wouldn't have been able to charge him with no pistol permit, and therefore perhaps would not have been able to seize the weapon.
Well, that's why my question is, if that makes it obviously easy to seize the weapon, because there's no concealed carry permit for it. Is there any other way to seize that weapon in that situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, I there may be. It takes the ability of the officer to articulate the probable cause to seize it. Now, let's say you had you knew gunshots were fired, and you searched this person, found out he had a firearm on him, and maybe if the officer would say, I smell fresh gunpowder, maybe that would give you probable cause to do it. But, that's a little gray area. Does that give you the cause, and would that hold up in court? But just the ability to make the arrest without any problems making the arrest and seize the weapon, test fire as they did, and matched it to a shooting two nights before, the same day that the double homicide occurred. And, somehow there's probably a connection to that.
And do y'all, and we've talked about it before, but because it's pretty interesting, and people see this on TV shows, but the science of this is you find a spent round, a bullet, and correct me if I'm wrong, at scene A, and then when you test fire, then whether the rifling or the residue or whatever on it.
There's two things you test for, the slug itself and the shell casing.
Okay.
When a gun fires and taps on that shell casing, it leaves a unique thing solely to just that gun.
Yeah,
you think if you had 100 Glocks, how could you tell? But all 100 Glocks would have a different tap on that shell casing.
The hammer strikes the primer is unique.
And the injection, or the thing that throws it off, it's unique to that gun.
Okay.
Once you get under a microscope, you can tell everyone's unique, and you can perfectly match them up. And that's how you tie two or three different shootings together. So that individual, or at least that weapon taken off that individual, that gun was used in a shooting two nights before on Airport Boulevard. And so it tells you how these things work. Most of them are retribution-type shootings. Mm-hmm. And, if they were there probably not to celebrate the or there to celebrate the killing of the two individuals rather than trying to be there for the good reasons of doing it, but just there to create more havoc.
All right, go to the phones, and Shane in Robertsdale up next. Hey, Shane.
Yes, sir. I wanted to talk to
You're on with Sheriff Cochran? Yeah, on with Sheriff Cochran.
So I hear you on this permit thing and how you're against it and stuff, though. But if somebody already committed the crime and the description's out prior to that crime, the permit don't matter. You can already search their car if they're...
That's correct.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so how is it different that the permit, the way the constitutional carry thing goes, or how y'all call it permitless carry, why would that make any difference when this is already happening that way?
Well, in this instance, they may not have had any suspects for the shooting at the Bleachers place, but now they've gathered evidence, and now they've recovered a gun, and it's proven that the gun was used in that shooting. What's so bad for us, a lot of times the victims of these gun shootings, they don't report to police who shot them. And they won't testify against them. They're just going to take it into their own hands. And many of these shootings lead to innocent bystanders being shot. And that's why it's so important for us to be able to investigate and tie these crimes together.
All right, Shane, appreciate the call. From the text line, unnamed texter, we'd like to thank Sheriff Cochran for his service to our community and giving us his time on FM Talk 106.5 and the Sean Sullivan Show. You've got how much longer?
Oh, I have right at 9 months to go, as many people know. You have to announce that you're not running again.
Yes.
And it's so far out, and it just, people are like, oh, he's retiring. Well, it's still quite
still
a while.
Got 9 months.
So I'm still got a fight to fight.
All right. Bob says, Sean, will I still be able to get a concealed carry permit so when I cross state lines, I won't be in any sort of trouble?
Yes. We'll continue to issue concealed carry permits, and I suspect that a lot of people will continue to get them because there's always a lot of confusion on what the permit covers and what it doesn't cover, and so I think people are just going to be on the, just say make sure everything's right, they're going to continue to get them.
And by the way, too, before you, and Bob probably knows this, but reciprocity maps are online. You need to check those out before you travel, because not all states recognize our concealed carry permit.
That's correct.
So do be aware. Let's see. You know what? This is from an unnamed texter and doesn't give a lot of details, but, you know, this is how y'all have – information's come through the show in the past that has – led to public safety. I think the last one was the people going 100 miles an hour on Chillinger, and you said no. And then
I said, yeah.
Yeah, they were. And y'all got them. This person said there were 50 shots fired between the Bubble Lounge and West End Watering Hole last Thursday. I haven't heard about this. Have you heard anything about it?
I have not.
So maybe nobody reported that. Catherine says, Sean, have you attended Citizens Police Academy? If not, you need to look into it and learn so much about the law enforcement in our community. I have not attended that. I attended the FBI Academy, and what I've done, and I don't know the policy on it now, but I've ridden along with y'all in the Mobile County Sheriff's Department, and I've ridden along with Mobile Police Department.
Yeah.
So those were, and I was a much younger man in my 20s, but it was eye-opening. Sure.
That started when I was police chief years ago, that Citizens Academy. We started the first one.
Well, Catherine says she learned a whole bunch from it. And there's classes every year, right?
Yeah. And they have your graduates, where you form an association.
Yes, yes.
In fact, I saw where they
Alumni
group. Yeah, they have an alumni group, and they just purchased, what was it, something for the Mobile Police Department just recently. Something for the mounted unit. They bought them rain suits to wear on the mounted unit.
Very good. The at least in Mardi Gras sense, the most effective law enforcement out there, the horses.
It's interesting. You know, people don't trust a horse, and they say, that horse will step on you, so they respect that horse.
Right. I mean, there'll be Mardi Gras, the Sheriff's Department or police saying, clear the street, do this, over. Here come the horses, and watch the Red Sea part.
I feel like the guy on a motorcycle, if he's going to run over you, he intentionally runs over you, but so you can blame him for running over you, but if that horse steps on your foot, you can't really blame him.
It moves crowds. All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. Our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, and your chance to ask the sheriff, our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. And one of my questions for you, Sheriff, and I'll interject mine into the mix here, too, is I heard some discussion of contraband moving at the jail. Right.
Yes.
And tunneling or holes being made, windows being kicked out of the jail. Is this going on right now? What's happening?
Yes, it's happening right now. It has been happening since we started a construction project down there, and some of the fences had to be taken down for the construction site, and it's drug on longer than what we thought. But the inmates have learned how to bust the little windows, and they're not big enough to stick your head or get through, but they bust the glass out, and they make a makeshift rope out of linens, and they'll have timing where they'll signal to people on the outside that will run up to the yard real quick, and they'll drop that thing down, they'll tie it, and they'll be gone in 30 seconds. They'll rope that stuff back up. They smuggle cell phones, tools, marijuana, other types of drugs.
This is how the stuff's getting in the jail then, coming up through the window.
Well, it is, and we're not so naive to think that there may be some of the employees that come in and out of the jail, because there's several or a couple, 100 people in and out every day. We're not so naive to think that it may not be that way too, so we're constantly approaching it. And, of course, the obvious question is, why not build a metal plate or something around that window?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the county has hired these engineers, and they've had four different sets of things they manufactured, and each time the inmates are able to bust them through, too. They've not been able to come up with it.
Is it in an individual cell where it's busted out, or is it in some general area?
Well, it's generally...
Because you could say, if Sullivan's in that cell, what the hell happened, Sullivan? You know?
Well, there'll be four people in that cell.
Okay.
And so we'll isolate, and then we take disciplinary actions when it happens. A lot of times we'll... Maybe somebody might see it on a camera or something, and we'll put that cell in lockdown. And quite frankly, we're shorthanded, and sometimes we'll put them in lockdown and have to wait maybe a couple hours or something till we have enough manpower to go in and do a shakedown, and then we'll recover. I mean, we've recovered all kinds of things.
So the people are getting up to the wall because the fence is down because of construction.
That, and we've had some have actually been able to overcome the Constantino wire.
That stuff is like razors, right?
But they'll throw a blanket over it and stuff like that. But I mean, it happens more frequently than what you would think. And we do have a deputy on special patrol, but our complex, as you know, is really large. Right. And so they'll time it to where maybe, you know, if the deputy's not back and forth, you know, changes this thing up, they'll right. time it. And like I say, it only takes 30 or 40 seconds. And in fact, one time in broad daylight, a guy ran across the construction site and connected something to it. And usually there's communications from within the jail by
which means there's phones
illegal
in there.
Phones in there already.
Yeah.
And or they can maybe call out and they can maybe figure a way, okay, which window is it? And they'll measure which window, and so they know ahead of time which window. And so we have people routinely patrol and look for broken windows, and if we find a broken window, then we're going to do a shakedown of that cell, and we'll find it. But see, if we hadn't found it quick enough, it'll get out of that cell and somewhere else and
gets moved,
and it gets moved and hidden. And the reason I mentioned the little tools, they'll use those little tools to take things apart somewhere, like either in a pipe run or around a shower or something, take something and then take it apart and hide the drugs underneath that and then put it back together. So you know, phone charges, phones,
drugs, you said?
Drugs, lots of drugs. I think we found a daggum nearly a kilo of cocaine one day hung in the fence. And so we recovered. A lot of it doesn't make it in there. And we just ordered a bunch of more wire and are putting it out now to make it more difficult to where they try to pull it up that it gets caught. Now, we've arrested a couple few people, but here's the point I would want to make is it makes you wonder, what do they have on those persons on the outside to make them take that risk? Because if we catch them, they're going to prison.
Right.
And so they're risking perhaps their life and certainly risking their freedom if we catch them. So what is that person on the inside holding over their head?
Right.
It may be, hey, if you don't bring us this, we're going to have somebody kill your mother or your daddy, or that kind of stuff goes on. And then, you know, threats. And so it just makes you wonder why they're doing it.
My gosh.
It's a constant challenge. And the tunneling, we don't have tunneling that you think of tunnel, but they'll tear some of the ceilings out and make a little metal pry thing and just sit there and carve and carve and carve until they make a hole through the brick wall. Now, we've not had anybody make one big enough to escape, but we've discovered probably four of those here lately.
How do you do the, like, can you go search the cells all at one time and find the, you know, how is it? Like,
well, it'd be manpower and intensive, but yeah, we have a routine where we go from cell to cell and stuff. But it just, you know, sometimes you don't find it. You know, they have mattresses. Sometimes they'll hide stuff in the individual mattress. So if you have 50, 60 mattresses, you'd have to search, and it looks like they're sealed up. So they may figure a way to unseal the mattress, seal it back up. Well, you don't want to cut into a mattress and tear it up, thinking that we're going to find something. But I mean, they're crafty. These people are.
Wow, when is the when's construction done on the?
I think it's supposed to be done in a couple more months.
Okay,
maybe the end of May.
You think that helps get the?
It's going to definitely we'll be able to get the some new fencing back up and stuff like that, and that should help a lot.
Okay, well, hopefully that gets some of the questions answered out there. Got time for maybe one more. We're looking at the top of the hour news. Kim is in Sims, and you're on with Sheriff Cochran. Got to make it quick.
Hey, I'm just confused about the, you were talking about the stopping someone from a shooting two nights ago and running the serial number on the gun and how that related, this guy before said related to the permit. Guns are not registered to individuals in Alabama, so how would a permit have helped that?
The way the permit would have helped, the person was arrested because he did not have a permit, and once he was arrested for that charge, the gun was seized off of his person. The gun was then shot, put through ballistics. And the ballistics, and that means either the shell casing or the bullets, they were used and recovered at another crime scene, the bullets or the shell casings. And so it proves that gun was used 2 days before in another crime because the shell casings, unique only to that gun, were recovered. And were it not for the permit, the person would not have been arrested. The gun would not have been seized.
There you go. It's interesting for people. I mean, I guess people have seen it on TV shows, but that's a real thing. You've got... Even you and I both are going to shoot, HK-40, right? Mm-hmm. Fantastic firearm. And we have stand side by side, same year, same everything. Mm-hmm. You can tell which one is which.
Absolutely.
And that's how that ballistics testing works.
It. Exactly.
All right. Before we wrap up, people want to get more information about what y'all are doing, see who's in jail, talk about pistol permits.
Follow us on Facebook, www.mobileso.com. We have a app you can download that you can check, see who's in jail. You can check, see who's wanted. You can check 24-hour crime. We post crimes as they occur, the serious crimes throughout the county. If you want to send in a tip on that crime, you can tap on that thing and send in a tip.
All right, very good, Sheriff. Good to see you.
As always, thank you, Sean, and enjoy your listeners and learn a lot from them.
All right, we'll do it again next month. Your chance to ask the sheriff. Coming right back, another hour of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.